Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. In the studio with me today on the political right, Representative Dan McKay.
Good morning, Natalie.
Great to see you, Dan. And on the political left, Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Just warming up on my hand sanitizer, ready for action today.
Jim, Utah GOP chooses new chairman, Rob Anderson. James Evans is out. I should have gone to Dan first on this, but you get the first.
No, we're going to miss James Evans. It's a terrible blow for the people of Utah to have James Evans gone. I mean, I just have never known anybody who could walk in a room and create more division. It's been remarkable to see that this whole reign of Mr. Evans.
Dan, I mean, give us the color commentary on this. I mean, from my perspective, a more moderate person is now in the seat, the chairman, Rob Anderson, a Davis County Republican. For someone like me, this is great news.
Yeah, I don't know where everybody – I mean, if you talk to Rob Anderson or listen to him in convention, I don't know where you get the, quote, moderate position from. Rob is – I would say Rob Anderson is moderate in tone.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that he's moderate necessarily in position.
Or in action.
He might be moderate in action as well, and which I think is always valuable for a party chair.
Well, I love the moderate in tone. What I'm most interested in is putting the Republican Party's finances back together and quit suing their own people.
And that's why – so you have the three candidates who are running. You had the James Evans, party chair, an outgoing party chair, and Phil Wright – and Rob Anderson. And of those three, you know, James was out first in the election, so it came down to Phil Wright and James Evans. And those two, when they were fighting it out, or, you know, when they're slogging it out, James or Phil made a very passionate plea to defend the caucus convention system and make a bunch of, you know, keep the lawsuit going and et cetera. And Rob said, look, so lawsuit or not, we've got to be able to take and get the party moving towards getting our candidates elected, which to me is what the party is for. The party is not for purity tests. The party is not for, you know, saying who's in and who's out. That is not what party leadership for. Party leadership is get people elected. Party leadership is not about holding people accountable.
Yeah.
It's not. It's about being a mouthpiece for the party.
And part of getting people elected is to conduct yourself in the same way as your ideology is, that is being fiscally responsible. And what are they, 500,000? Or is it just 400,000?
They say that number is totally made up. I'm waiting to hear from Rob, candidly,
but,
on what the number is.
But we all know that many mainstream Republicans are not donating to the party anymore, and many are in the business community that are the people that have the means to support the party, and they're not supporting it.
And they would like to support the party.
Yeah. And so this is good news to have Rob Anderson.
But it's been very positive for us candidates because at the end of the day, they just cut the party out as the middleman, and they come right to us, which has been phenomenal.
Interesting. Jim, do you have any other comment on the either – declining relevance or lack of relevance of political parties?
They
today?
Don't matter. they setting up the process, you know, they're there to get people on the ballot. They're there to kind of do a lot of legal mumbo jumbo. But the old days where they're party bosses and big things decided, you know, candidates for presidents decided long ago that their organizations. Nobody turns to the party when they get the nomination and says, okay, you run things. I mean,
yeah.
Parties are an anachronism.
Well, so parties are an anachronism, but we just got a new one, the United Utah Party. I know a little bit about this, not much, but I'm friends with Richard Davis, who, you know, is the BYU political science professor, writes a column in the Deseret News, and he's part of the team putting forward this new safe place for people who have been alienated by Republicans
safe
and Democrats.
Politics and safe place in the same sentence. Okay, I'm going to ask you this, Natalie, since you know them and you know where they're going. One, have you joined?
No.
Okay. Two, sorry to put you on the spot.
No, that's okay. I mean, I'm still a Republican. I believe in the Republican ideology. I'm trying to make it work.
Okay. So, two, how many campaigns has Richard been involved in? Knock doors, put out mailers, run campaigns, et cetera? You know that question? I don't know.
No idea, but he's, I think of him as an academic, and so he studies.
That's always my problem with academics,
politics,
right?
Politics, yeah.
You, on the other hand, have been on the policy side, worked in governor's office, et cetera. You have that background experience. Mm-hmm. I'm going to defer to Natalie Gochner when it comes to issues, right? Mm-hmm. But when I look at academics that come in and say, I've got an idea, I need a safe place in politics where I feel like I can be respected, and I'm going to put everybody in a room that's going to agree with me and make this new political party. All I say to Richard is, get small rooms for your conventions.
And I got to ask Jim, although I'm hesitant here, because Jim, I don't know how much he reads the Deseret News. He should read it more. But Richard writes some pretty compelling, edgy columns. Do you read them, Jim?
I read them a lot.
Yeah, so.
As a matter of fact, I think Richard has his column because of me. I went to the Deseret News editorial
board. We all do.
I went to the Deseret News editorial board and said, there's not a Democrat anywhere within 100 miles. You got nothing from Democrats. I want to write a column. Here's two columns. And a couple weeks later, they hired Richard. So,
good choice.
You know, I hope I ought to be getting 50% of his money. Look, Richard, he's in his own world, and it's a conflicted world, and we'll see how many people he shares that world with. Good luck to him.
Yeah.
I loved the initial list of people that were all joining. They were people defecting from your party, Jim. Of all the parties that need safe places, I would argue yours isn't the one that needs people leaving.
Utah County people for the Democrats.
Both of them.
You know. Yeah, exactly.
Dan, before we go to break, help our listeners understand what on earth happened with the special election and a special session and the battle between the legislature and the governor. Where did it end?
Well, right. End is an interesting word,
right? I knew you
were
going to challenge me on that.
Yeah,
it's not over until the fat lady
sings,
right?
You see that Senate leadership and House leadership have said, look, we're not going to litigate over this because it's just going to drag out the timeline. Uh-huh. And I agree with them. I don't think that merits any value. You saw, though, that there is this frustration about, you know, the separation of powers issue. And so I think...
Talking about Jason Chaffetz's seat in the process for having an election.
Yeah. Thanks for the context.
And so I think as that has kind of ferreted itself out, right now the storm seems to have died down. But I don't think the flame within many in the legislative know is died out for saying, oh,
I
really?
See. So we have...
We'll show you.
Representative Chaffetz turned in his letter of resignation effective June 30th. A special election is on the call to happen, and the lieutenant governor and governor have put forward the way for that to happen.
Yeah.
And this, Jim, affects your party as well because it's an open seat for a Republican or a Democrat.
The ember from this confrontation will have little to do with the election process. But what I'm hearing more and more on Capitol Hill is, you know what? We're three separate branches of government. How are we in the position where the executive calls us in a special session? We're our own branch of government. We ought to be able to call ourselves in a special session. And I suspect that will be the thing that
will go down.
Do you agree with that? Yeah. I mean, I actually agree with that. Most states, that's not true. The legislature can call themselves in. Why would we give that power over to the executive branch?
You know, I mentioned this to Dan recently, but it's too much government for me if the legislature can call themselves into special session and move ever closer to a full-time legislature. I think that would be bad for our state. And I like having a strong chief executive and a governor. I think it's a great check to the legislature.
Jim.
Whatever, Jim.
Jim, that's not nice. You be nice.
Yeah. Hey, in our next segment, let's continue this conversation on the Chaffetz seat and talk about how everyone and their dog is officially running for Chaffetz seat. Stay tuned.
Dan McKay on the right.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Before we went to break, Jim gave his best dog bark because we're going to talk about how everyone and their dog's running for Chaffetz seat. I wondered if Dan could give us his best dog bark.
Woof.
Woof. I can do a...
You guys are better than
Not
I am,
bad.
No, that was really good, actually. Okay. That's St. Bernardish almost.
Yeah, mine's a little subdued. Oh, okay, so the Democrats. We have Ben Frank, Carl Ingwell, and Catherine Allen. I do not know any of these three, but...
Well, Catherine Allen has a $600,000
She's got a bank.
Account,
I know
right?
that. I've read her in the paper. But Jim, Dan makes the point that you could actually have a Democratic primary because of the signature gathering.
You know, I mean, I don't think it matters much.
I think he's meaning that a Republican will win the seat.
You know where he's going. You know where he's going. Let me. I'm gonna launch my inner Jim DeBacchus right now. Let me change my voice tone real quick. Sorry, that's too much like non-Nazi.
You know exactly where I was going. So.
All right.
The Republicans that have gerrymandered this race, Dan, and it's just going to be picked already.
I got in front of me a little list, so let's read it. Tanner Ainge, Chris Herod, Damian Kidd, Deidre Henderson, John Curtis, Margaret Dayton, and Brad Daugh.
Yes.
That's the Republican slate, we believe, for this seat.
So far, right? I mean, I think if you look at having... What, is that seven total Republicans on the race versus three Democrats? I think both parties could be looking at a guaranteed primary.
Okay. And of surprises there, so Tanner Ainge, this is a new entry to politics, Danny Ainge's son. What makes him qualified to run for political office? Just what's the word out there?
Well, he's over the constitutional age, and he's a Utah.
Yeah, okay.
Now you're qualified, right? I mean, that's what's funny about
the People's Congress.
Right? Yeah, it's a People's Congress. If you work with anybody in D.C. and work with Congress, you understand they really are a cross-sampling of the country.
Yeah.
It's not like there's an education minimum. It's not like there's a reading test for Congress might be interesting.
Yeah. So the question I have for you guys, why is elected office so attractive? I mean, why do all these people want to do this job? And there were more rumored.
That's a better question. You're almost asking us why we do it.
You're going to fracture your home life, you know, presumably, because you may have a spouse and another that works here.
You're going to spend 150 to 180 days a year out on the road.
You're not going to make a ton of money.
No, you don't. Well, you're not doing this for the money.
Go ahead.
You know, Hatch went in there pretty poor, and he's pretty rich now, and it wasn't on that salary. I mean, somehow they do manage to make money. And,
but
and
I would guess that money's not the motivation here. I think this is...
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know what... I mean, I think a part of it is, community service, and I do believe these people want to be relevant and do something good.
I think there's something amazing about being involved in things that are bigger than yourself.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons I love being involved in politics is these are all problems, issues that are far bigger than little old me.
Makes life fun. So in my case, I haven't run for any elected office since I was in sixth grade.
Yet.
I was vice president of my sixth grade. Mm. Oh, sorry, of my elementary school.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it doesn't have that draw to me. But look at these folks.
We have this crown prince idea. And the latest candidate is this Mr. Tanner, whose daddy was a great basketball player and whatever, and he joins this
Cue the Josh Romney speech.
Hall of Fame with Mike Lee. You know, is there a soul that believes he would have got the nomination if it wasn't for his daddy and Huntsman and Bennett? And we just go on and on and on with this nepotism because people had famous daddies. Give me a break. Let's get people that have earned it with their own hands. And if they have a famous daddy, at least they can have a track record of having done something like Mr. Romney to help the public.
Well, it's going to be interesting. I know some of these candidates, not all of them, but there's a lot of high-quality people there. So that's good to see.
Who's the highest quality?
I don't know how to respond to that. I'm a big fan of Deidre Henderson. I like what she's done in the Senate.
So sexist.
Well, I like that, too.
That's just
I like
terrible.
Brad Daugh, and I like John Curtis. I don't know Margaret Dayton very well.
Deidre would be a good congresswoman.
Yeah. I don't know the others. I just know, I mean, I know Deidre, I know Chris Herod, I know Margaret Dayton and Brad Daugh. I know those four very well. And all four of them would be strong.
Mm-hmm.
But as I handicap that race, I think Deidre's going to be more attractive to the voting base.
She's
got very conservative
to offer.
But she also has an open mind and she's pragmatic. You know, if you bring her a better idea, she will listen to you. And
she's
you know.
A very skilled person.
Yeah.
She's just very talented.
Does her homework.
So the Chaffetz story is like the story that won't go away. But the other one that won't go away is homeless services. And right now in the news, the big topic is selecting which of the homeless service centers get which population cohort. And the decision is out there that South Salt Lake will be the housing for single men, which is the toughest one to take as a community. I'm putting on my inner, Mayor McAdams. What a tough thing he's been leading here.
Yeah, He has taken more hits in this whole process.
Yeah, because there's been like a lot of transparency, all these public hearings and a lot of people involved. But then this decision's made and people are questioning. I can't answer when that decision was made. How did you make that?
He's down from platinum boy to like golden boy now. Everybody feels, you know. I just think that is what happens as an executive. You end up making decisions.
Yeah. So I work at the Gardner Policy Institute on South Temple in this beautiful mansion, the old LDS Business College. It's about 411 East South Temple. All day today, there was a homeless person out front on the lawn with a lot of, things. I don't know what else to call them, blankets and things. Yeah. But he spent a good part of the day yelling at people and even chased some people. Like a guy goes by on a bike and he goes running after him. And it was getting a weird enough that we called the police. And I only mention this because it's amazing how this just – this morning I'm at Murray Park and saw someone sleeping outside a restaurant. You know, it's moved – all over the place in Salt Lake County. And the real concern here, Jim, I wondered if you would comment on this, is that they're so close to the Jordan River Parkway. And it's ripe for a massive tent city campground along this beautiful parkway.
Well, you know what we need? I mean, we got to stop all this ideology. We need that $600-700 million a year from Medicaid expansion that would be directly to treat the mental illness of many of these people. Mm-hmm. We got to stop playing political games and take that money. That would be the single biggest. I mean, it's not a little shot. It would be an astonishing shot. We're counting our pennies and we're high fiving over the $30 million over 3 years. This is in the neighborhood of $600-700 million a year. I mean, you really want to solve it? That gets you a lot further down the road. Look at the person who was outside of the policy center.
Did you
clearly
say road?
Somebody with...
Did you say road or hole? Get you down further in the hole or further down the road?
We'd start making a dent on this.
Yeah. This person was mentally ill, Jim. He was...
There's nowhere for them to go.
Much of our homeless.
You know, they end up in the jail and that's it. We don't have the treatment facilities. We would have the treatment facilities. We'd be able to pay for the medication for these people, the ones that would take it. And the legislature just ideologically, they just can't go there. And it's a pity.
Yeah, Dan, so I want to hear you respond to this just from this. You don't have to get into the Medicaid expansion politics too much, but you kind of do. I mean, so this is a public problem. It's outside of their,
no question.
You know, a family problem or whatever. My father was a psychiatrist. He's passed away, but I feel like mental health services is something I understand pretty well growing up in a family of a practitioner. And what do we do? I mean, you have to spend money. You have to invest in these people.
Yeah. And honestly, there are no shortcuts. That's what we're quickly learning, right? It's not like you can just build a center and all of a sudden the problem's gone away.
You could build housing. It wouldn't solve the problem.
Yeah, it doesn't solve the problem.
So you could build more jails. It wouldn't solve the problem.
That's right.
There's a root cause here that's so much deeper. And you know, you guys have heard me say this before, but I go root cause all the way back to third grade reading.
Interesting.
Meaning, you know, a lot of problems happen because people aren't invested in and able to succeed in this
preschool
world.
Preschool.
You know what I love that is happening today, and this is kind of a shift in the way society is looking at this, is society is more and more looking at mental illness less and less as this disability and more as something, you know, that we need to get away from stigmas and those kinds of things around mental illness. And we need to start, you know, dealing with the issues and also be more upfront with one another about mental illness.
Yeah.
And I've loved that. I've watched, you know, several of these, you know, stars that have had one issue or another, especially depression. You see that a lot right now, or people are jumping out and just saying, hey, look, I have depression, or I have anxiety, I have OCD issues, I have all these things. And while you see me in my expensive car and my nice clothes and my, you know, my uniform on football Sunday, you look at those things and you think everything's perfect, but there are issues, and we
Tanner
have to
Mangum,
deal with
case
them.
In point.
Yeah, Tanner Mangum's article is a delightful, you know, expose on that. And I think
does Jim know who
the more
Tanner
and more
Mangum
we do
is?
It.
Do you remember he was my person of the week a couple of weeks ago?
That's right. Yeah,
I was going to be careful just because we are going to sports again on this show.
Okay,
We're going to soccer here. If you have one more word, Dan, so hold on.
I
can smell RSL.
Manchester United coming to town. Hey, guys, we've gotten all the way this deep in the program, and we haven't spoken about President Trump. And I don't.
Hey, nice.
Maybe that would be really nice.
I'll just make it my gripe.
But I just have.
we haven't talked about
I
my boy.
I would love to hear Jim and his, you know, you know, political savvy or whatever, comment on what a successful overseas trip this guy's had. It surprised me.
I don't know. He said that's because...
I don't know if he thought I was serious, but you know, I mean, he's...
The standard is so low.
It's a problem here, but
where he sits in the office of Netanyahu and says, I just got back from the Middle East. I mean, and did you see the grimace on the face of the U.S. ambassador? This man is an idiot. He really... Every day, gets worse.
Ship's failing the kindness test.
Okay, maybe I was a little over the top in saying it's going pretty well, but it's sure going better than it is for him here in this country.
Yeah, well, isn't that... isn't that the template that presidents follow?
It is.
When things are not going well domestically, they go abroad.
Go see NATO.
And when things aren't going well abroad,
go to the
they're
D-Day
always
beaches.
Touring around at home, right?
Yeah.
Obama spent a lot of time touring U.S. cities because it went horribly for him internationally.
I've interacted with people who study presidential rhetoric. And when you work in D.C., there's just a lot of people in speech writing that study rhetoric as a topic. Anyway, they're going to study... this president for years to come. And when he called after that devastating, awful terrorist attack in Manchester City, he called these terrorists losers, evil losers. And it's just, it was a way of trivializing something to me. Because I think of a loser as, you know, something a teenager would say and somebody that, you know, went to a dance and said something rude to a dirt.
Minor.
And this is, you know...
Keep your eye on Stewart and Love. If they start twisting, then it's all over for Trump.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
And that's going to be decided on what's going on in Saratoga Springs and in Davis County. If that starts to lose, it will go as thunder. Because Stewart's still talking. You know, he's on the Intelligence Committee and he's still standing by his man, but they're not gonna put themselves under the train. So when they sense that it's switching, they're gonna dump him under, and it could go really fast.
Yeah, Dan, I think that's a really insightful point. When some of these people that have stuck with Trump really start to twist, it shows that he won't finish his 4 years.
Interesting. It's interesting.
So I've had a lot of people ask me that in the last week. Do you think he'll finish his term? Do you think? And I come at it from an economist's point of view, and I'm thinking, wow. Well, interest rates are going up. Yep. Costs of doing business are going up. And we got people asking if the president will finish his four-year term.
A lot of uncertainty.
Yeah.
Imagine this, a Montana congressional seat that could go, that'll be decided by the time we say this, but at least the reports are that it could go either way. I'm saying... A few of those start to flip, and you're going to see Mia Love going, ah! These guys are not going to go down with Donald J. Trump.
Hey, we got to go to gripes. Jim, on that sheet of yours with all that doodling, do you have a gripe?
Yeah.
You should see. We should Twitter out what his sheets end up looking like.
SITLA. They're supposedly the people that are protecting Utah's land. They are blackmailing the state now. And they're threatening to take one of the most popular areas in the state for outdoor recreation and camping and hunting. And they're going to sell it off or fence it off for out-of-state rich guys if the state doesn't give them another $1 million. It's state land. SITLA provides 1% of the state's education, and they don't mind just selling off our precious state land. Boo, boo, boo to SITLA.
Wow. Dan? I thought we weren't political on gripes.
Who made that up?
Yeah.
That's my
new
gripe.
You can gripe about anything you want.
For gripes, you know, I'm always trying to. Oh, it's supposed to be something true. Okay, so my gripe today is time limits. I mean, we keep getting these terrible reminders from our producer that we're over time and not getting stuff. So I'm just going to say, you know what? Out of respect for the time, I'm just going to not use all of it.
Good. I have a prepared gripe today. I saw these. Everyone's complaining about the Trump budget cuts and how terrible it'll be for EPA and, you know.
With a $2 trillion rounding error?
Well, here's my deal. deal is... Bill Gates has this famous quote where he says that we always overestimate the change that will occur in the next 2 years and we underestimate the impact of change over the next 10 years.
Oh, interesting.
So I reply it to budgets by saying, it's not the cuts that I'm worried about, it's the debt. And the debt is a problem, and we got to face it.
Yeah, and we do very little to face it.
And, yeah, we should be complaining about that.
He took that budget. We'll talk about it next week.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Senator Jim DeBacchus and Representative Dan McKay. Programs produced by Emily Means. Thanks for listening.